And welcome to another episode of the Geeks for the Win podcast, the podcast where we cover all things geeky. This is episode number 35, and I am your host, William, known as Poetic Soul 44, and I'm joined with my co-host, Stuart,
known across the internet as Casual Terror, and who's not playing Pokemon right now, surprisingly.
And we are joined with a special guest who goes by the name Deshane Box.
Hey, everybody.
And Henry, known as Knox, will not be on for a few minutes, probably 10 to 15 minutes, but, you know, he's running a bit late, so we're running late as well, but we got to start without him. But I guess we can jump into you mentioned Pokemon, Stuart.
Yes.
You wanted to talk quickly about it?
Yes, Pokemon came out Sunday in the U.S., and I got it. I got black. I got the black.
Why Sunday? That seems like an odd day for a game release.
Yeah, and it came out in Europe first. That was another thing that was weird.
I thought Sunday was like the typical Nintendo release day, though.
I don't buy a lot of Nintendo stuff, so I don't know. Could be.
I haven't. Well, I don't know. I haven't bought a Nintendo product at the release date for. Since maybe GameCube, maybe?
This is my first.
So, you said your third badge?
I'm working on my third badge.
So you've had enough time to really get the feel of it?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, just, you know, all new Pokemon, you know, they won't give you the older Pokemon until your second playthrough. So, your first time through, it's all new. But, you know, I've been playing Pokemon since Red and Blue. I remember in elementary school on the playgrounds, we used to hide in a corner and battle each other.
Doesn't get any geekier than that.
But what kind of surprises me is some stuff still hasn't changed since then. Because, like, your starting Pokemon, it is still, hey, choose a grass type, a fire type, or a water type. Still the same. Been that way for, 15 years? However long Pokemon's been around?
Yeah, the 15, I think this is the 16th year. I think it came out in 95.
And the, when you walk into, Pokemon Center, the music is exactly the same. You know, when you put your Pokemon to heal themselves, you get the ding, 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 ding. Same. But,
are you really listening to the music a lot, though, in that game? Because, I mean, when I used to play Pokemon, I would just turn the music off and either listen to real music or something else, since there's no voice acting at all.
Yeah, you know, for the first couple hours or so, I had the music on. Like, instead of, like, a static animation of your Pokemon during the battle, they'll kind of move about. And they'll actually have different animations for all their moves, which I kind of like. It looks good. Let's see what else. Oh, like, I just, like, you know, not even an hour ago, got into, like, it's a really big city. And this is the first place that has curves. Like, you actually go around a curve. And you walk around the outline of the city. And It was funny because the first person I actually talked to, because I talked to everybody, said, "This bridge has a curve. It's so weird." I just thought that was funny.
That is kind of funny. Yeah, I love Pokemon. I've found it addictive since Red and Blue, but I can't justify that having a DS just for that. Honestly, I normally don't ever play. Whenever I've bought a DS like four different times, and I've always sold it or traded it back because I just would get on a week or two of playing nonstop, and then I'd, you know, slowly find other things to do or get busy, and so I'm definitely skipping this. Normally I would buy a DS just to play this, but not the case this go around.
It's a blast. What's not in there right now, like it hasn't gone live yet, is something, oh, I forget the name of it. Pokemon Game Link something. It's PGL. Pokemon Global League, that's it. It's a matchmaking service. You know, you just say, hey, I just want to do a random match. Find me somebody. And that's what it'll do, supposedly. It's not quite live yet, but that's what it says to do.
Huh.
And you can, like, go into Pokemon's dreams when you put them to sleep. I don't know. It won't be live for a couple more weeks.
Okay. That's a bit unusual, but...
Like, you can tell, like, what people are, like, who around you is playing. And, like, there's surveys that you can take. This is all in-game. And then, you know, where, you know, you don't have to go to a certain person or whatever. You can do this from in the middle of the forest.
Hmm. Well, I guess it's good to see they're adding some new things instead of what they've done previously, which was the same stuff, different, you know, different Pokemon, different names.
The same game with a different name and a different color?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, because this is only like the fifth generation.
But, you know, two games each generation.
Yeah, but like, I have to say there's been like 13 games. A lot of those are just saying, hey, this game is the same as this game. Only we made it look pretty.
Yeah. So, anything else you want to touch on it about?
Other than, you know, hey, hit me up with your friend code, and you can kick my ass.
Alrighty. Next we can actually we can get our guest to actually speak up on this. Deshane, you've been playing Bulletstorm.
Yeah, I got it when it released, but I played it a little bit that first night, and then because of work and other things. It really didn't do much with it until the middle of last week and really got into it. Played quite a bit of the Anarchy mode with you and primarily with DJ and Paladin. And then one night Wolf joined us as well. And then over the weekend I finished the campaign. So I've spent quite a bit of time with the game. I don't know exactly how many hours at this point, but probably at least 15 to 20 hours with it.
Yeah. So you're enjoying it, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a better game than I had the impression of from the demo. And in fact, the one thing I haven't done in the actual game is to go into Echo mode, which Echo mode is what the demo, was essentially showing you. Anarchy mode is the up to four player co-op mode, and then of course the regular campaign. Anarchy's fun. It's sort of their version of Horde, and I enjoyed it. But I would say, after playing it three nights in a row, and particularly Friday night, we played two different maps all the way through level 20. And by the end of that, you know, the third night in a row and going through so many different ones, I was a little bit tired of that. Was really impressed, though, with the single player, with the campaign. And I don't know, with it being a new game, how much we want to either get into spoilers or avoid spoilers. But I would say, of course, that the controversy around the game, around the language, shows up at the start of the game, and it gets heavy again near the end of the game. When a particular character joins your party. But in between, it's really not that bad, aside from the names of some of the skill shots. But the skill shots do add a lot to the game. It makes it interesting, particularly as you pick up a new weapon, as you unlock a new weapon, or you unlock the charge shots for a weapon you already have. It opens up new skill shots, and there's a lot of stuff to do. In that regard, the different environments have some different skill shots to them, and overall, very good game. I don't think it's likely to be in my top five for this year, but it's sort of like my mental comparison is, for me, it's like Singularity was last year. Singularity was not in my top five games last year, but it was an excellent shooter that I'm really glad I got to play. I feel the same way with Bulletstorm. It's a really good shooter. Adds some unique things to it. It's a lot of fun. I would say it doesn't take itself too seriously, although at times it does take itself relatively seriously. But in general, it's just a lot of fun to play. So I know you've talked a little bit about it before, but I think you really enjoyed it as well.
Oh, definitely. And as far as getting the spoilers, I don't mind. I mean, but Stuart, I'm not sure if he's going to play it or not. So
not anytime soon. And I'll forget what you guys said.
Okay. So do you want to get a little bit into spoilers, Deshane?
Sure, if you want to talk about the story. Because I think that's one of the surprising things about the game is there really is a little more of a story to it than what I would have thought just by the advertising or the marketing for the game. So early on, and anybody that's listened to any podcast or discussion knows that pretty much early on, your crew finds out that they have been used by the military, one general in particular. I think, isn't he a general? Is that what he is?
General, yes. And I got to say up front, I hate that character. There's not been a character in any video game where I've hated that much.
Oh, they made him very much a somebody you dislike.
Oh, definitely, which I give them kudos for that, because that's the purpose of a villain, is to not really like them.
Yeah. I would say, and of course everybody out there who knows me is going to say, oh, gee, he's going to reference Half-Life. I would say the comparable character, in my opinion, is Dr. Breen from Half-Life 2, who is the guy who basically sold humanity out to the Combine. And he's dislikable in the exact opposite end. The general will tell you exactly what he's thinking, right? I mean, he's foul-mouthed. He's straight to the point. Breen was one of these guys who, oh, this isn't really what you want to do. You just don't understand how things are working. You know, he's one of those guys, would you just shut up, you know, kind of.
Yeah,
anyway,
and you think he's so ignorant and stupid, and then at the end he just becomes basically a genius in your eyes. At least that's how I thought. I couldn't believe.
He's a lot smarter than he lets on, right? And he's playing the characters pretty well through the final segment of the game. And he is the guy that shows up. When he shows up, everything he says pretty much is just over the top. Doesn't make a lot of sense sometimes, right? Because he just puts insults together that's just a string of words that you would normally never put together. But basically, the story is the Grayson Hunt's crew, Dead Echo, as they refer to themselves, leave him when they realize what he's been having them do, and they've been on the run. And through a series of circumstances at the start of the game, they end up next to his big cruiser, and Grayson makes a split-second decision that rather than running, he's going to try to destroy that cruiser. And that ends up with both ships crashing on the planet beneath them, and the story from there is about primarily about Grayson trying to get the one surviving member of his crew off the planet.
Yeah, and that surviving member is actually becomes a cyborg.
Yeah,
which I really enjoyed the struggle he had within himself, like, you know, the cyborg taking control throughout the entire game, and I really thought that was an interesting, twist, or not twist, but interesting factor in the game.
Yeah, because you never knew exactly how he was going to react, because the human side was still loyal to Grayson Hunt. And so if he was in control, he tended to be very supportive. If, on the other hand, the robot was gaining the upper hand, or the artificial intelligence, or however you want to refer to it, was gaining control, then he was very much antagonistic towards Grayson. And basically, you know, if I think you're not doing what I want you to do, I'll kill you, right? And so while he quote unquote was with you and had your back, you weren't real comfortable with him at your back.
He only had your back because that you were, you know, the useful one to help him survive.
Yeah.
He only cared about surviving, and you were variable for his survival.
Yeah. But basically, the interesting piece, and I heard you mention this, I don't remember if it was on the last episode or if it was something you had tweeted or maybe you mentioned while we were playing Anarchy, but they actually, within the story, do incorporate an explanation for the skill shot system.
Yes, which I thought that was just genius.
Yeah, it was interesting that it wasn't just a, oh, wow, this is a video game thing, right? But it actually meant something to the character in the game. Now, he doesn't realize the full extent of it until very late in the game when they meet up with Trishka?
Trishka, yes.
Who was one of the members of Final Echo. Was that the name of her squad?
I believe so, yes. Final Echo.
And basically, she is the last surviving member of that squad, and they end up hooking up with her to try to get to the general so they can get to an escape pod and leave the planet. It's sort of the trajectory of the story. And it's in conversation with her is where you find out that the leash and the skill point systems were set up to train Echo team members and basically to weed out those who were not as competent as I think it's Grayson that makes the comment and not the cyborg. I can't think of his name right now.
Ishii.
And not Ishii, but after she explains it, he makes a comment about survival of the fittest at its finest or something like that, right? And basically that was the ideal, was if you're good and you can pull this stuff off, then at these stations, you can get better weapons, you can get more ammo. But if you're not doing that, then you don't have as many points to spend, and your likelihood of survival is going to drop significantly.
Yeah, and it seems really cool, but given the general and the kind of man he is, it makes so sense.
Oh, yeah, it very much fits his character.
And we mentioned Trishka. I really enjoyed the fact that she was proportioned well. She wasn't, you know, a big-chested, you know, gal who was barely wearing any clothing, and you could see it, you know, she looked like a normal person. And
yeah, she was built in such a way that you could believe that she was a member of this elite squad, right?
Definitely, and she probably has one of the worst mouths in the game as well.
Yeah, she can spout off at times. But again, go ahead.
Is that the I'm going to kill your dicks lady?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's okay. The lady.
Yeah. And I think part of that, once you get to the end of the game where the general shows up and you get to spend more time with him, I think all of it is a reflection of them having served under him, because he is the absolute worst one of the group, right? And it's one of those things, if you've served under him and been around him, you're going to pick up some of that language, right? Some of that way of talking.
Definitely. What was your favorite part of the game?
Are you talking about a particular set piece or...
Like any type, yeah, a particular section in the game, like either a boss or a moment or something. Like mine would probably be the when you got to control the giant robot Godzilla.
Well, that was where my mind was going, because that is a lot of fun.
Definitely.
What is he naming? Tallywhacker?
Oh.
Wiggly Tallywhacker or something like that,
yes.
Right when he dies.
Yeah, something really funny.
Yeah, but yeah, that is one of the better parts of the game. It took me a little bit to get the controls down, but once I did, it was a lot of fun controlling him. The other part I liked was the run to rescue Ishii through the garden kind of area, where you had all the different plants. And it seemed to me like there were just between the man, basically the man-eating fly traps, or I forget exactly what they called them, but with those and the nom-noms and all the other things around, it just seemed to me like there was a lot of different stuff you could do in that area.
Yeah, and what really confused me was the main boss that was at the not the main boss, but the in like towards that level, the giant I guess boss battle. That was like the biggest boss battle of the whole game, and it was towards the middle of the actual campaign.
Yeah,
so I found that kind of weird, and that was a hard boss, I got to say.
Yeah, I was a little, because you know when it first happened, when you first get there and you first start, I died from the roots the first time the roots started coming up. And then I figured out, you know, sort of how to avoid them. And I, you know, I did the next thing that you had to do. And I figured, okay, I killed it. Well, no, then it does something else. Well, then you got to do, you know, you got to fight that again. And then it does something else. And then when it finally pulls itself up out of the ground, you think finally it's dead. And no, it flips itself over and attaches itself to the ceiling. And I thought, is this thing ever going to end? But it wasn't that hard, right? Once you got into it, it was actually kind of fun in some
way. Yeah, I mean, I had the same thoughts you did. You know, when will this end? But yeah, after it was done, I just thought, wow, that was really cool. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, so I would say, you know, I really like the game. They definitely set it up for a sequel.
Oh, my God, the ending. What did you think? Like, the final section.
Well, are you talking about, so you watched all the way through the
The blackout credits? the black screen, just the talk.
Yeah, so I can't say I was overly surprised by that, given that he had been such a main character. The fact that he doesn't end up dead isn't all that surprising, but it definitely leaves you fully expecting, as if the last scene with Grayson and Trishka didn't, expecting they're going to do a sequel. I wonder, though, that the thing I've thought about, having finished it, is what are they going to do for skill shots? Because they had so many skill shots in this game, and what can you do, right? You've kicked things into cactuses, you've kicked them into barbed wire.
New weapons, new environments.
It's got to be something like that. But it'll be interesting to me to see if they can, you know, have that same kind of variety in the sequel.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be DLC for it. I think a couple Echo modes and then a couple new Anarchy maps. So it'll be very interesting to see, you know, what they do with that, how they can change the different environments for the, you know, for the skill shots to... So that'll actually be, an inside look to see how it's possible to add new skill shots. But
yeah,
that ending definitely got me and made that black scene where you just heard Ishii and the general talking made the game so much better for me. And you know, like I said, I was just thinking of it as, you know, just to turn my brain off, have a good time playing, you know. Playing it because I enjoyed the demo. I thought it was fun, and the story really surprised me.
Yeah.
But unless you have something else to say on it,
I have a
question. Okay, go ahead.
I don't know if you guys have heard this or not, but what do you guys think of the rumor kind of that all took place in the same universe as Gears of War?
I don't know. The games have a bit different look to them, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that world definitely does not look like... I can't think of what the name of the world is in Gears right now, but... It definitely looks different. I mean...
It's a lot more colorful, and...
Yes.
The look of it was very similar to... or it reminded me of the look on Enslaved, as far as the color-wise.
Yeah, the palette was much greater. The color palette was much greater in this than it is in Gears.
Maybe this world just isn't as gray.
It could be, I guess. But I would, you know, that's one of those, there's always going to be those kinds of theories. But it's not really, Epic published this, but Epic did not do this, right? The game
people
was made
fly
by people,
or
people can't
people
fly.
People can't fly, yeah.
Yeah. So I would be a little surprised, I guess, if they tied it into Gears.
Yeah, and, you know, for years people have been asking for them to do something different with the first-person shooter, and now they have. And it, right now it's actually $40 on Amazon. I've seen things that this is a price cut for good, so if that's true, then that's a great deal for this game. Because, you know, Blue Man Rule from OFR asked me if it's worth it for $40, and I told him I feel it was worth it for $60, but, you know, $40, that's even better.
Yeah, and I think they've almost got to do that, given what else is coming out over the next month or so, right? If they have any hope of this continuing to sell, they're going to have to drop the price permanently.
Well, it's sold a lot. From I can't really say any specific numbers because I can't remember, but it sold a good couple million at least.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything definite numbers-wise, but I know it has sold. I told somebody because they were saying that something about Killzone 3, and the first place I stopped to pick it up the day it came out, the GameStop close to where I work, was sold out of Bulletstorm. They did not have any copies that weren't pre-orders left. So I actually had to come to the GameStop, which is closer to where I live, which I live in a smaller town, and they very seldom sell out of anything. So, benefit.
Alrighty. Any more questions, Stuart?
No, I'm good.
Alrighty.
Knox, how about you? Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I was about to say, Knox has finally joined us. You got any questions?
Nah, man. Bulletstorm, you know I'm not really too high on Bulletstorm, but... I played it actually. It's a pretty good game, but you know, it's not one of the big ones I'm really, you know, just into right now.
No, understandable. Next, I guess on the show topics we have, what is this? Neptune's Pride game diary.
Did any of you look at this? I added this.
I just saw this today, and I looked it up. It looks really cool.
You know, there's a part of me that feels the same way, but there's also a part of me that thinks, man, if I got involved in this. So just to give, I take it, William and Henry, you guys haven't looked at this, the Neptune's Pride.
Yeah, I kind of briefly looked at it earlier. It seems pretty cool, I mean, from what they're kind of describing in it.
Yeah, I briefly looked at it too. I don't know. It's interesting. You want to describe it for our audience?
Yeah. So basically, what Neptune's Pride is it's a browser-based strategy game. It plays out in real time. So you get a group of people together to go in and do it, and you start off in control of four stars. And basically, just like any kind of strategy game, you're building up resources, you're building up your science, you're expanding out, taking new territory. What's unique about this is because it sort of plays out in real time, a game takes several days, potentially, you know, weeks or more, not probably multiple weeks, but over a week, because, like, if you decide to send your ships to a star, you got 30 minutes after you give the order, and after that 30 minutes, you cannot recall them. So when you make a decision, it's going to take them some time to get there, and you only have a certain amount of time to pull them back. And so what got me into this was Rock, Paper, Shotgun linked to an article from a guy who created a diary when he was playing the game. So he gives you an introduction, and then he starts going day by day as to what transpires. And they actually played it sort of as a role-playing game. So he created a race of people he called the Aspiration. And basically the goal of the Aspiration was to try to make everybody else like them, right? They believed they were the good people and that the whole universe or their whole galaxy area should look like them. And the problem is, this is going on continually. So it's not like a situation where people, things only happen when you're in the game. Things continue to happen while you're away from the game. And so it just plays out that way. I'm not sure. I mean, he says a lot of people don't make it to the end, that it gets so tense for them that they drop out. And I'm not sure that that wouldn't be the case with me.
Yeah, I saw that. Is this more or less, is it text based or something like Mafia Wars or something like that? Like as far as the basic gameplay?
It's not text based. There are some graphics to it, but it's not like there's a lot of detailed graphics to it, right? So right. It's like a map of the stars, and you see which stars you're controlling and which stars the people around you are controlling to a certain extent, right? So a lot of this is you don't know what's really going on. You don't know if people that you're talking to that are saying they're your friends are really your friends, or just beyond your border, are they amassing an army getting ready to attack you?
Sounds lot like Civilization to me.
Well, it's got some element of that. The difference is, I think the big difference is the fact that it plays out again in real time. So Civilization, right, you can be playing it and then you can put the game on hold and then you come back to it, right? Whereas this, there is no putting this game on hold.
Yeah, it kind of seems like a more of like a almost like a spacey Farmville / Civ, you know, kind of got some Command and Conquer stuff going on here too.
Yeah.
So even when I leave the game, there's stuff of course still going on in the world. Is that one of those things where it's kind of like almost penalizing the player, because if I don't play that much, you know, do other people get better or have better chances of winning just by virtue of them playing more?
Well, that's one of the drawbacks, right? And so the guy who did the diary in his intro, one of the things he said he set out to prove was that somebody who didn't have as much time really didn't stand a chance of winning the game, right? Because he's right. Got a job and he had kids, and right. So he said these other people were going to be able to check the internet more and see what was happening, you know. And so, like, if he was attacking them, they would know pretty quickly. Whereas if they were attacking right. him, it might be several hours before he realized it. And so, you know, there was a good chance that they would be able to set things up so that they could beat him. And so, yeah, there is a bit of that, right? And that's one of the things he says is it starts getting under your skin and you start figuring out ways to be able to check the internet to see what's going on and to see who's attacking who and that kind of stuff. He's not done with his series yet. He's up to the point where basically he knows he's not going to win. And all he's trying to do now is to sabotage one of the particular other players that he feels has been very strong in the game, and he wants to see if at the very least he can't take him down so that somebody else will win the game.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I see everybody has their own specific, I guess, their name. Like, do you jump in and you name your faction or whatever?
Right.
Or whatever side that you're on? Because I see there's multiple stars, and then there's different colors, and there's a name for each faction. So can you group up with people to kind of take one large person down, or come together and, you know, kind of do the whole divide and conquer thing with players?
Well, you can if you're willing to trust them.
Hmm.
But what you don't know is, are they doing a double agent kind of thing where they're saying something to somebody else? Hey, look, this person wants me to help them attack you. We've already got an alliance, so I'm going to act like I'm helping them so that they don't put anything along my border. And as they're amassing along your border, I'll attack from my side, right?
Wow, that's so pretty cool.
It's really sort of a mind game, right? But you've almost got to work together because different stars produce different types of benefits. And so you need to trade technology and stuff with the people around you.
It's like a space age Survivor.
Sort of, yeah. But it sounds interesting. It looks interesting. I just don't know if I would have the fortitude to stick with it long enough to see the game through to its completion.
Yeah, and then I'm on the iPhone. Did they say is this running off Flash, or is it just running off just strictly web based? Like, can you know, people in the Droid market, people that have iPhones, all different type of markets actually run it? Because, you know, most people do have jobs and kids and everything else, so to be able to access it, people are probably going to be accessing it from their phone.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't look deep enough into it to see if you could bring it up, like, on an iPhone or an Android phone, or so I'm not sure what's behind the interface. I would think you could, looking at the screenshots, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, you should be able to. I mean, if it's web-based, I mean, I would hope they would have some type of way that you can access it, because it seems pretty fun. It's almost like it's got like the multiplayer aspect of like a Words with Friends that you can kind of open up, but, you know, it's a little bit more serious because, you know, you're actually fighting for territory and, you know, making alliances and breaking and, you know, going back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, my only problem would be I just don't have the time to play something like this and devote a lot of the time needed into it, because, you know, when I do have free time, I like to play full-length games because of much better experience. So, I mean, it's interesting, but I definitely don't need anything to obsess over. I mean, I obsess over Twitter. I constantly check Twitter nonstop, and that's really puts a strain on me. And I've actually been trying to cut back on Twitter, so I don't need to replace that obsession with something else.
See, He's having withdrawals.
I still think you can take, you know, 98% of that conversation right there and put Civilization to it. Same thing. That could be just me, but, you know, I was addicted to Civilization for a while, and
The two big differences I see is, first off, I think Civilization is much more complex. I think there are many more things to control. I think this is stripped down a little bit, so it's a little more accessible in that. And then the other thing is just the real-time aspect of, because Civilization is turn-based.
Yeah,
and you have different aspects on the way that you can win, too. You have, what is it, cultural victories, you have technology victories.
Yeah.
You know, you got political victories, things like that. This seems like more of a back to the basics, you know, real streamlined.
Yeah.
But I guess the complexity is just in how much you put into it. And that's the thing,
right.
I guess, going back to what Poetic was saying, like, how much time do you have to invest to get into that complexity?
Right.
I'm just glad that Dragon Age is coming out tonight. I won't get sucked into this.
Yeah.
Wow, how many more times can Stuart, you know, bring up Dragon Age?
It is preloaded on my computer right now.
Alrighty,
I'm just waiting for them to flip that switch.
I'm sure this would be able to play on some type of mobile device, whether it is just web based or if it's Flash based. The mid range to high range Android phones can run Flash, so.
Yeah,
and you know, if it does really well, then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they made an app for it on the different platforms. But alrighty, definitely interesting, and I do like the way those types of things are going, because it does get more people involved in gaming, like the casual types, I guess. So yeah, I do, but I'm just afraid I would be addicted to it, so I just got to stay away from that. Next, I guess we got on the show notes it says 2011 sleeper hits. Some of these could be, but some of these I don't think are sleeper at all.
I don't either.
Yeah, I mean, well, the reason why I kind of put that on there because last year we had kind of like the same kind of rundown. You know, you have games like Deus Ex. I can kind of compare that to, not saying that this is the same type game, but you know, Deus Ex is kind of like along that, almost like that Darksiders, you know, kind of vibe where everybody's kind of looking at it, but not really. Then you got L.A. Noire, which is from Rockstar, which, you know, last year Red Dead Redemption surprised the heck out of people on how good it was, because everybody was like, oh, it's going to be Grand Theft Auto in the West or whatever and all this and everything, but the game did awesome. You know, and then there's a couple others. You know, you got Infamous 2 coming out, which is, people are a little bit high on it, but I heard talks of people saying, well, I don't know if it's going to be better than one because they changed the character. They changed him back, different art design. So,
it's a level creator in Infamous 2.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
That'll be interesting.
For the campaign. We'll get into all that. Do you guys want to go out to Battlefield first?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I am completely high on this game. I actually didn't play a whole lot of Battlefield 2. I'm not familiar with the Battlefield series as a whole. I remember the ones that were out on the PC a long while ago. But I actually jumped into Battlefield during the Bad Company series. So maybe you guys would be able to speak more to it as far as the series itself more than me. But when I saw this trailer, like, I was completely just taken back with this trailer. I mean, just the spectral lighting, just the graphics, just the, I guess the atmosphere, the ambience, the ambience of the sound. I mean, tons of stuff in this trailer just stood out, and it just totally blew my mind when I saw this trailer.
Oh yeah, that trailer was amazing. The only thing was, what stuck out at me, I've never noticed this in a game before, but when he was looking through the reticle, like down the sights,
yeah,
the gun did not look right. It looked like it was a 2D image just pasted right on the front.
I didn't notice that at all.
Yeah, I didn't notice that either.
It was just something I'm like, that doesn't look right. Something is off about the gun.
Talking about the reticle or the actual barrel of the gun?
The gun, like when he was firing it and it was shaking, like it just looked like a 2D image just kind of stuck over the video.
I gotta check that out again. But all in all, to me, I mean,
but I'm a big fan of the Battlefield series. I didn't play any of the Bad Company games, but I played 2, 1942, 1943, 2142. I played a bunch. Heroes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they said they want to stick true to the Battlefield series, but they want to make it a little bit more visceral, a little bit more realistic. And from what I can tell, this trailer, like this is gonna. This is gonna steal my Killzone 3 time. It's even gonna, dare I say, kill my Halo Reach time. And you guys know how.
Oh wow,
a Halo fan. I mean, when I saw this trailer, man, like I may just be overhyping it, but like just the realism of it, just the level of when like the guy's running, the way he holds his gun, the way your characters interact. Did you see when he approached the that door and that fist was on the side and you know dog is barking. Then he pointed the gun at the dog, and the dog kind of shot out, with the rest of the trash that was on the side. And it kind of, I don't know, man, just everything about the trailer was just so precise. I really hope that that's actual gameplay, and they're claiming that it is. It's done with the Frostbite 2 engine. So, I mean, hopefully they can pull that off and,
Yeah, I mean, I've played 1942, and I've tried 1943, and I really enjoyed those games. And I really tried getting into Bad Company 2, but I don't know what about it. I just couldn't get into it. I think maybe the problem for me was the map seemed a little too big.
Yeah, Bad Company's real big on large maps and tactical.
So it's like by the time you got to something, it seemed like by the time I actually got somewhere, everyone had died or respawned somewhere else, and It really was an unpleasant experience for me. But I'm definitely looking forward to more info on Battlefield 3 because a lot of people are hyping it, a lot of people are excited about it. So I go where the community goes, basically. But I what's interesting is I've heard a lot of people compare it to Call of Duty. I've heard on a few different podcasts people say it looks very similar to Call of Duty. No. What do you guys think?
I think it looks better.
Way better.
Alrighty.
What do you think, Deshane?
I can understand why people would say that just in the way the campaign looks. I would say where it's going to distinguish itself for good or bad is in the multiplayer.
I think everybody's going to compare a modern military shooter to Call of Duty, no matter what
it
is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it has to. But I think this is just me. But I think with Battlefield 3, I think they have a much better. I think EA has a much better opportunity to steal the Call of Duty thunder. They probably won't steal all of it, but I think even more so than Medal of Honor, I think they need to get behind Battlefield 3, because with these graphics, with the community that Battlefield already has as far as a whole, as far as the actual name, I think that has a little bit more selling power than one of the few guys left at Infinity Ward. They asked him it, and they said, "Hey, you know, Battlefield 3, they have a new Frostbite 2 engine. Have you seen the trailer? You know, da 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 da." And he was like, "Yeah, I've seen it, but you can rest assured that Modern Warfare 3 will not have a new engine." So, you know, we all know Modern Warfare 3 is coming out at the end of this year sometime, because it's going to be an annual Call of Duty release. But I think Battlefield has the opportunity to really, I guess, showcase what DICE can do, and also as EA as a publisher, they can kind of steal a bunch of that market share away, because, I mean, this looks awesome from what they showed, and the fact that Modern Warfare is not coming out with a new engine.
Yes, so, I mean, basically it all depends on the average day gamer who buys the Call of Duties. I guess a lot of people would say, like, the frat boy type gamers.
Yeah.
It depends on whether or not they jump. I mean, because I still can see this year's Call of Duty selling outrageous numbers. So, I mean, it just depends on how they market Battlefield 3, I guess. Marketing will be a big key to it, I'm definitely sure. But yeah, definitely looking forward to hearing more about it throughout the year.
Yeah, now, have they given a release date? This is for later, much later this year, right? This is like a holiday release. Or have they said?
I haven't seen anything. But
they didn't show an actual date in the trailer. They just said the second trailer will be out sometime in March, March 16th or something like that.
So, okay. I mean, is it coming out this year, or?
Yeah, I think it's this year.
Okay, because didn't Battlefield 2 come out, like, early in the year?
No.
I can't remember.
Not Battlefield 2.
Company 2. Battlefield Company 2.
Oh, Bad Company. Yeah,
I believe so. It was last year.
Yeah, early last year. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they pushed it back to, you know, avoid the Call of Duty, just because that's the smarter thing to do, whether it's they're going to be a better game or not. You know, you want to avoid that juggernaut. But it'd definitely be interesting. I guess next is Infamous 2, which I never played the first one. One of the games I need to play.
Yeah, I never played the first one either, but I'm actually reading more and more about the series. They had, like, one of those little motion comics. I believe I read it on my iPhone somewhere. Somebody sent it to me. Of course, everybody knows I just got a PS3, so I'm real high on all the Sony exclusives, so that'll be my next game I'm going to buy is Infamous 1. Infamous 2 looks pretty promising. One thing that kind of stands out where they have the ability to create, I guess, your own campaign missions. I don't know. They haven't went into a whole lot of detail about it, but I guess you can go and you can create an actual campaign mission, and you can submit it to the community, and people can play through it, or you can play through it yourself or whatnot. I'm not sure exactly how it works, but as far as the graphics look beautiful on it. I don't have a stake in the fight as far as the original character. I guess Cole looks a little bit different now. I guess they changed his appearance and things like that. So a lot of the fans are real anti-change in that area. But like I said, I don't have any resonating factors with the old character. So I mean, it looks good to me.
Well, I haven't seen any recent screenshots, but after they showed that initially last year and the fan reaction, I thought for sure Sony came out and said, "Hey, okay, we hear you. We're changing it back."
That's my understanding, too.
Oh, okay.
The first game was great. A lot of fun, a lot of different missions. The thing that bothers me or concerns me a little bit about this game, it's going to come out more or less the same time of year that Infamous came out, the first one. The problem is, this year, this is going to come out at the end of, at least for me, the busiest part of the year for video games. So if you look through mid-April through May, there's just, starting with Portal 2, Duke Nukem, which some people are probably going to pass on, but I got to at least find out how close it comes. L.A. Noire, I think, is in there, which is on our list to talk about.
Doesn't Prototype 2 come out the same around the same time?
It came out almost the same time. The original Prototype came out almost the same time as Infamous. I don't remember exactly when Prototype 2 is coming out. But there's a stretch in there where it's like every other week, and in some cases, 1 week right after the next, there are big titles. And this is going to be at the end of that. And I'm wondering, you know, at some point, you got to take a break, right? You got to come up for air.
Yeah.
And so I want to play this game, but I'm just not sure it can be a day one purchase for me.
Yeah, especially when you talk about single player experiences. I mean, we have, you know, Deus Ex, L.A. Noire, Infamous is another single player experience. You know, are people really going to want to drop another $60 on another single player experience? You know, yeah. It's kind of like, you know, I know how I am. Like, I want to play with the community, so I'll get Killzone, I'll get Battlefield 3. You know, I'll get, you know, the CODs of the year because I want to play with the community. Whereas, you know, you kind of look at the single player games and you kind of, well, I know I do. I kind of figure out, okay, which one of these games am I really, really high on? Let me buy this one now and let me let the other two wait or drop in price or whatever because I'm not really too high on it.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a big problem with it. And I just did a quick check and Prototype 2 comes out into this month. It's saying 31st.
Oh,
wait,
wow.
No, never mind. That's 2012. Wow.
Oh, okay.
I heard on some podcast that it was supposed to come out the same time as Infamous 2, so I'm not sure. I guess they were definitely wrong.
The thing I will say, though, to both of you, Infamous is a very story-heavy game with a pretty shocking reveal if it's not already been spoiled for you at the end of it.
Nope.
No.
So I would highly recommend that you play the first. Some games, playing the second game, not having played the first one, doesn't make a big deal. In my opinion, you need to play the first game.
Oh, I definitely plan on it. I was going to play it when it came out, but just didn't have the funds and other stuff came up. I played the demo like straight when it hit the PSN. Like,
yeah.
And I loved it. So that's just one of my games. Shamefully, I haven't gotten around to playing, but I definitely will play that before the second one because I just love the game play of it. It just felt really fun.
Yeah.
Alrighty. I guess L.A. Noire.
Yeah, I don't want to. I mean, I'll let you guys go if you guys watch the trailer. I put it in the show notes. I don't know if you guys watched it, but did you see the facial animation capture that they did? I don't really think, other than maybe, I think they did it one time on the Matrix game, the Enter the Matrix game, back on the original Xbox and PS2. Other than that, I really can't think of another game besides Heavy Rain that has, I guess, the level of acting detail. I've heard from some people who play Enslaved said that the acting animation for that game is pretty good, but this game takes it to a whole nother level. Like, they actually recorded each actor, and when you see the actor, it's not just a voice actor. It's that actor is not only acting the performance, but they're also acting within the game. So I mean, just that alone is taking it to another level because the game is based on you're a detective where you have to figure out if people are lying or, you know, you got to kind of look for those little small facial cues and eyebrows being raised and people biting their teeth or their lip or whatever to kind of figure out, I guess, different cases that you'll actually go on. So I thought that was a cool element that they put into it, and they've spent, you know, that much time, you know, trying to painstakingly get those facial captures perfect.
Yeah, it definitely is interesting the way like you said, the facial captures and the way basically the look of it, and I've just heard nothing but praise about the look of it, and it's just going to be an amazing game. But honestly, I know I'm probably the minority on here, but I'm probably going to skip this game and just pick it up later when there's not when there's a dead space, I guess, of in the gaming world, because there's just too many things I have. You know, there's too many games coming out, and I can't play all of them. Honestly, I can't play all of them. So this will definitely probably be, I guess, maybe you know, whenever it gets to the bargain bin, I guess, or maybe before that. I've heard nothing but good praise from it, and, you know, after everyone was surprised from Red Dead Redemption, this definitely, I think, has gotten a lot of, you know, hype, and a lot of people are looking forward to it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because I'm the exact same way. Like I'm not real high on it now, but I said the same thing about GTA 4. Everybody was after GTA 4. I was like, man, it's Grand Theft Auto. They're dumbing it down. Got into it. I loved it. I started playing Red Dead Redemption. I think the game came out in May. I didn't start playing it till like July. Absolutely loved the story. Loved the multiplayer. So at this point, Rockstar, they have a proven track record. So I'll probably be picking this one up day one just because of the fact that I like Rockstar games, and I've been low on a game before, Red Dead and GTA, and then all of a sudden it just turns out to be this wonderful hit. They haven't announced anything as far as multiplayer, so I don't know if it'll have, you know, as big of a massive appeal as Red Dead, because multiplayer was fun in that game, so we shall see.
Yeah, I'm almost the exact opposite in that I'm not big on open world games, and not really a fan of most of what Rockstar has done in that vein. But this game, based on what I know about it at this point, I don't know if it'll be a day one, because again, it's coming out in a really heavy period, but it's definitely something I plan on playing very shortly after it comes out. I just like the ideal. To me, I was a huge fan of Heavy Rain last year, and there's a bit of the Heavy Rain feel to me in this, in that you get to go around and question people and try to figure out, you know, who's telling you the truth, and you get to decide, are you going to push this person or not push this person, and that kind of stuff. And I just enjoy those kind of gameplay elements.
Yeah, yeah. And see, I think this one has the potential. I can't, you know, speak for it, but just the way it's kind of going, because you're playing a detective that's trying to solve an actual case, so you have a purpose. A lot of times in GTA, or even in Red Dead for that matter, like a lot of times it's not as focused, so you wind up doing all these other little side missions and just going killing people and you're rampaging everywhere, where I think this one kind of brings some of that stuff down. So, you know, in that same vein where you said that you're not a fan of, you know, a big open world games, I really think just because of the time period that this one is based in and the story, I think this will have more of a more focused appeal. And so you'll be able to kind of, you know, kind of set yourself in this world and still focus on each case. So,
Stuart,
I don't know much about this game. I really don't, other than what you guys have said. I'm probably going to wait on this game until everyone's saying, "Oh, this game is so awesome." Then I'll probably go out and get it. But until then,
fair enough. Next is a game that I don't know a lot about. Like Stuart just said, with LA Noire, I don't know a lot about this game. But Deus Ex, the new Deus Ex game, I know it's a prequel, and basically you don't have to have played any of the old ones to enjoy it. So that makes me very happy. And after listening to, I think it was Weekend Confirmed, they really hyped it up, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. I know, Deshane, you have a lot of, you're a big fan of the Deus Ex series.
Yeah,
so Deus Ex, the original, is my number one game of all time, right? So it is still, to me, the best game I've ever played.
Wow, better than Half-Life?
better than Half-Life. So the thing to understand, so two games before this, Deus Ex, the original, and then the sequel was Deus Ex Invisible War. So
that's the
people,
one that was on the original Xbox, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So Deus Ex may have came out on like the PS2 at one point, but basically it was a PC game.
Yeah.
And Invisible War came out on both consoles and the PC. In the original Deus Ex, you played as J.C. Denton. And J.C. Denton was the second nano-augmented agent. Prior to he and his brother Paul, the agents were basically, for lack of a better term, they were cyborgs, right? They had mechanical augmentations. So instead of these mechanical pieces, JC and Paul had nanomachines or nanites implanted in them, and then they could get these upgrades that would improve their abilities. So in that game, it's got the RPG elements because you can choose what you're going to upgrade. It also allowed you to approach things from very different ways. So if you wanted to play as a very stealthy character, you could play as a stealthy character, and you had stun guns and tranquilizer darts and those kinds of things so that you were more somewhat nonviolent in the way you approach situations. On the other hand, if you wanted to, you could go in guns blazing, right? You could up your skills with firearms or with sniper rifles or anything like that that you wanted, and you could approach the situation very differently. But really, though, so it blended the shooter elements with the RPG elements. But what really set the game apart in my mind was how you approach things would change the way people reacted to you. So two of the agents that you worked with who were mechanically augmented agents were very – one was a German and one was a Russian. And as you might expect by those characterizations, they were very gung-ho, right? They were the guns blazing type.
Right.
And if you went in guns blazing, they would tell you about how great you were, and it's good to see you're not like your brother Paul, who's afraid to take action. But there were other people that you would interface with that if you went in to a situation that way would react very negatively to you.
And so in the original, did you have a squad, or was this just like people that you, I guess, no, come across as far as your agency?
It's just people that you would come across, and they might be out on a mission with you, but they would not physically go with you, right? They'd be doing something else, right? So, like, in one early mission, Anna Navarra, the female Russian agent, basically says, I'm going to go here and guard this entrance so that if anybody tries to escape when you're coming in, I'll be there to catch them, right? So she's there to see what happens, but she's not actually with you when you're doing stuff. The same is true of your brother, Paul. You'll be told, well, Paul has been sent to do this, and in order to help him, you need to go do this kind of situation. And then you would come back to basically the agency is UNATCO, so it's a sort of the United Nations police force, and they're headquartered at the remains of the Empire State Building. Or not the Empire State Building, the Statue of Liberty, excuse me. And so you would come back to UNATCO headquarters basically at the end of every mission, and there's a debrief, and you interact with people, and you can get additional weapons, and there's this gunnery sergeant, right, who's in control of the armory to give you additional weapons, and you can ask him for different things and that kind of stuff. You can also interact with the other characters.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was actually I don't know if you got a chance to look at it. I had tweeted you guys about the Invisible Wall guys. They actually had an opportunity to get a hands-on look at it. So this Deus Ex that's coming up is actually a spiritual predecessor to the original Deus Exes.
Yeah.
And so this story, I guess, is concerning, I guess the first time they're starting to, I guess, delve into, I guess, the human mind and how much can the body take of these different augments. Like, can it, you know, is it possible to keep this going? But there's a lot of political stuff in here, too. Like, what's the push in this storyline now, since it's actually a prequel, like Poetic was talking about?
Well, from what I understand, and I have a love-hate relationship with previews for this. Because on the one hand, I want to come into it fairly fresh, The main thing I was concerned about, okay, when Invisible War came out, Invisible War is a good game, but it is nothing compared to the original Deus Ex. They stripped out a lot of the complexity, a lot of the interaction stuff was just gone from Invisible War. And so when Square Enix and Eidos started working on this, one of the things they came out with very early saying was, we understand why there was a negative reaction to Invisible War, and we're going to try to capture the experience of the original Deus Ex. And so what they've done, one of the problems with Invisible War is the way Deus Ex ended, it really didn't set itself up well for a sequel. So what they've done here is they've gone to a prequel, and they've said, okay, let's look at, instead of the first nano agents, let's go back and look at some of the early mechanically augmented agents. And to your point, what's going on, at least from what I've seen in the trailers, is you have these different factions now that are starting to react. Some people don't want people to be augmented at all, right? So there is a group of people who say, this is bad, you're not human, you're changing these people up. And then there's these other people, to your point, who are wanting to say, just how far can we go with this, right? So I can't think of the guy's name, Seraph. So Seraph Industries, right, is a leader in developing this stuff. And the head guy there is like, well, you know, we just want to unleash what is already in people's DNA.
Yeah, right? They're trying to push the boundaries of how far we can take it.
Right. And so there are at least these two groups. And if it is like the original Deus Ex, you'll find out there's at least one more group, one more faction. And part of what you've got to do by the end of the game is choose who you think's right and who you're basically going to fight to have end up in control. Now, it'll be interesting to see, right, because the ending of this has to at least provide for coming into the start of the original Deus Ex. So they're somewhat limited on what they can do there. But at the same time, I suspect what you're going to see is that Adam Jensen is going to have to make some difficult choices about whether he's going to side with Seraph, whether he's going to side with the totally no augmentation people, or again, I suspect there's at least one or two other factions that we're going to find out about as we play the game.
Yeah, hopefully they'll give you some type of RPG element or choice. I know it has different RPG elements as far as like, I guess the gun attachments, or I guess even your augmentations you can kind of, change and, detach and reattach. But I'm also curious about just the gameplay, because the gameplay looks awesome to me, from the art design to, I mean, it's got a little bit of Splinter Cell going on. It's got a little bit of Mass Effect going on as far as the controls.
Yeah.
It's first person. It's got a cover system like Rainbow Six. I mean, it's taken a lot of elements. I mean, the conversation system, they haven't shown anything on that, but you can tell that you're going to have points where you can talk to people and things like that. So they're taking a lot of good things from other franchises and kind of adapting it to the Deus Ex world. Or maybe those other franchises stole that from the original Deus Ex. I don't know.
Yeah, you would be surprised if you go back. Graphically, admittedly, it's dated today, right? I mean, the graphics are clearly not.
Right.
The game came out in like 2001, right? So it's 10 years old. The graphics are definitely dated, but in terms of the conversations you have and that kind of stuff, very similar to what I'm seeing in the trailers. So it really has. And again, the Weekend Confirm guys and the Invisible Wall guys, all basically what they're saying is, yeah, it feels a lot like the original.
Hmm. Stuart, poetic?
I've said what I've had to say. I mean, I really don't know much about it except for what I've heard on like the Weekend Confirmed and what you just said, Shane, but from what they were saying before, I mean, before you said what you said, what they were saying was just basically what you said, and it was amazing. And just to think about a game being able to do all that different things, and if they can actually pull it off, and it's actually a good, fun game, then I'm definitely set. I'll definitely play it.
And I think Square has said 25 hours just for the main story.
Wow.
Wow.
Not including side missions?
Not including all the side missions. is, I believe, what I've heard, which is pretty consistent with the original Deus Ex. And I played the original Deus Ex 7 times, 8 times.
Eh. All right.
Stuart? Yeah,
I knew what you just said is everything I know about Deus Ex. it sounds like it was a game that was well ahead of its time.
Yes. Yeah. It really had a lot of elements to it that have been picked up here and there, but nobody has really come back and reintegrated that package into a whole again. So it sounds like Square and Eidos have pulled it off, and if they have, you know, for a while my Raptor thing on Twitter said, you know, I'm wasting time with whatever Deus Ex Human Revolution comes out, right? So if they have gotten 99% of the way to matching the original game, this is my game of the year, hands down. Unless something really comes out and blows me away.
Oh, man.
Well, I pray that it's not a disappointment.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm looking right now, and I purchased Deus Ex Game of the Year Edition back when it was
on sale.
I think it was $1.
Yeah, they've had sales on it where it's been really cheap on Steam.
So I wasn't sure or not whether I had or not, so I've been looking that up while you were talking, and I have, so I may end up playing that beforehand. Or I have it to play afterwards, actually.
Yeah.
What would you recommend? Would you recommend I play the original after I play the first, or the prequel, or?
I guess what I would say is, at this point, they've not given a firm release date. Everybody expects, given that they've brought people in to see it and they've lifted the embargo, everybody's expecting it's coming out sooner rather than later, but they still haven't given a firm date. If it's coming out later in the year, I would say go ahead and play the first game. If it's coming out, you know, soon, just play Human Revolution first, and then if you like it, go back to the first one.
Alrighty. I'm, you know, no matter what, I'm glad I picked it up for $1.
Yeah.
But,
Steam great? You can buy games and not even...
Oh, no, it wasn't on Steam. It was on Games for Windows.
Okay.
Yeah, actually. They've done that a whole lot lately. They've been selling games for $1.50. Yeah. I think they were doing something after December. They were selling games for a cent or something like that.
Yeah, actually, I think that's what it was. I think I did pick it up for a penny.
Wow.
That and I think Age of Empires 3. I think I have that too, yeah. So
yeah, I just wish that they would I just wish that they would adapt that and really not just getting on Microsoft but just across the board for all digital content. Like just do the way Steam does. I mean, digital content should depreciate the way regular content does. I mean, I know I've had conversation with Blue Man and Zabari about this same thing, but I think that they would just sell more. Like, look at Pac-Man DX. I just picked that up this past week. It dropped down to $5. Like, I mean, because people go into frenzies when, I mean, $5, 400 Microsoft points. I mean, yeah, I mean, you got an automatic audience that just picks a ton of it up, you know, when this stuff goes, you know, cheap. Oh,
I definitely agree. I mean, I picked up Castle Crashers when it was on sale. I mean, I'm surprised right now it's still $15, I think.
And yeah, I think it's still been, 15, but yeah.
It's been out for, what, 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, that should be no more than 10. I mean, I would say 7. I mean, it's a good co-op game, and I mean, if you mark it down to under 7 and post it up on the dashboard, you get so many hits, you know?
Versus it just being there and no one buying it.
I mean, right.
But I don't know. It makes sense, and I guess that's why it's not happening. That seems to be the way. That seems to be the way it is. I guess next game or the last one on the list is Darkspore, which has something to do with the game Spore.
Very little actually to do with Spore. The only thing that it has in common with Spore is the creature creator from Spore is being used within the game. This game is actually the best descriptions that people are giving for this is Diablo 2, sci-fi Diablo 2.
Hmm. Huh.
And basically you have three different creatures that you build, and that you take into battle, and it's a loot drop system. And you can do co-op in it as well, up to four-player co-op. Now, the one thing I need to say is it's a PC-only game at this point. So at this point, it's, I have not seen any plans for them to bring it to the 360 or the PS3. But it looks really interesting, in my opinion. So I think it could be a surprise hit, because I think a lot of people are seeing the Spore name and thinking, oh, it's just some variation of Spore. And it's really not. It's an entirely different game.
Honestly, I didn't. Oh, sorry, but honestly, I didn't really think about that till I looked up the wiki and saw it. I mean, because Spore, I really didn't think too much about it when it came out, because it just, I don't know, it just seemed, it didn't seem like for me. But
yeah,
this looks amazing.
Yeah, if you go to the link that that is in the show notes, that actually describes the loot drop system and the different kinds of loot and how you can try to maximize your loot. And there's some really neat things they're doing there. So if you're into loot drops at all, like Borderlands or Too Human or Diablo, obviously, worth taking a look at.
Yeah, this is something that I can see myself getting into, because I try my best, but throughout the years, whenever they have a creation tool type game like Spore, or even something as simplistic and as easy as Halo's Forge mode, I just suck at it. Like I don't know if my brain doesn't work in such a way where I'm a creative person, but when it comes to creating stuff, you know, inside of you know actual spaces and things like that, I just can't do it. I usually wind up, you know, just downloading content from the community and stuff like that, and just kind of playing with their stuff. I think that's the reason why I'm not too big on Little Big Planet, but this looks a lot better, because it is like Diablo, and it's got the loot and stuff like that. You can kind of jump in and play it, you know, even though you're still kind of, I guess you probably will still create your character, but that's not going to be, I guess, the main focus tool of it. It's just by just good, you know, turn-based fun.
I could definitely see them, if this really does well on the PC, probably making a console port. I mean, I'm not sure how easily it will be on the, you know, to play on a console or not. I guess that plays a big role, but I mean, I could definitely see this being a big hit if it was on the console.
Yeah, they really, really should, because it seems real, you know, real simplistic. And it's got that Torchlight Diablo feel to it, you know. So I don't think it'll be terribly hard to just adapt it, you know.
Definitely.
Did you ever play Spore?
No, I didn't. I never played the original Spore. I played it. I never actually had it. I had a couple friends that had it on PC, and I kind of just stood back and just watched them mess around with it. But I mean, it's a good game. It's just that I'm absolutely horrible when it comes to, you know, creating stuff and trying to create, you know, the, I guess, the perfect monster to, you know, evolve and adapt. And I always lose at those games.
Well, that's kind of what's going to make my point. It is that the creature creator in Spore is just so easy. You cannot go wrong. Like, there is no dumb mistake, except maybe not making a mouth. But other than that, you cannot make a mistake.
Yeah. But I know it's so easy. Yeah, I mean, but I know in the character creator how they have like certain things, you know, make you a better creature and allow you, you know, I guess better skills to evolve and things like that. And I always wound up making like the most absurd creature, trying to, you know, I guess I think too much sometimes. I don't know.
Okay. That, I just, like I said, it never seemed, Spore didn't really catch me. It didn't seem like it would be my type of game. I don't know, it just looked too kiddie, honestly. I know that's probably not the best excuse, but that's I'd look at it.
But then you start up the game, and you see what other people have created, and you see penises and boobs, and yeah, it goes the wayside of user-created content.
Are you trying to sell that? Are you trying to use that as a selling point to me, or what? I'm kind of confused.
No, I'm just saying how kitty it quickly did not become.
Oh, I think that's even more kitty. Honestly, I mean, maybe not. I don't know. Very immature. But anyways,
speaking of kitty.
Huh?
Oh no, I was just saying the next topic.
Oh, Nintendo 3DS has Netflix. Woohoo!
You ruined the segue.
Well, I wasn't sure whether or not we were going to cover this because I can't really think what if I can't say too much about it. I mean, the device is going to have Netflix.
Yeah, it's just another point. Just saying, you know, and once again, another device that, I mean, Netflix is signing contracts left and right. Like, you know, I was just kind of touching on last week when we talked about the Amazon streaming content and talk about, you know, a couple other services like Redbox and things like that. Like Netflix, I don't know how they're doing it. I mean, you know, they're only charging, what was it? I mean, their lowest plan is $8 a month. They're charging I just upgraded my plan to Blu-ray, and I'm paying $11 a month, and I mean, I'm on cloud nine, man. Like, I don't see how they're doing it, but they keep getting these devices, getting these contracts with these movie houses, and they're just moving forward. I mean, Netflix is everywhere now. They're inside of TVs, DVD players. I mean, now they're going to be in the 3DS, probably going to be in the NGP, PSP2. So, I mean, it's just amazing how they keep pushing forward.
Definitely, and I was just waiting for them to be on Android. It's just that's a challenge for them because there's the Android platform is on so many different devices. It's just a challenge, and I've seen press releases of them saying, you know, they're trying to support they're working to support the mid range to higher end phones because they all have like the same type of processors. Basically, like the Snapdragons or, you know, stuff like those, versus like being able to just do it on all Androids because, you know, there are a lot of cheap Android phones, just, you know, the cheap hardware, and they throw Android on it just so they can sell it and say, hey, grab a smartphone. So,
yeah, I mean, I really hope that they do. I mean, because, I mean, you got to think of the intricacy of the 3DS and they still have it available on 3DS. I mean, so I think it can be done. I just think, you know, just to your point, I think they're having a hard time getting with these manufacturers and I guess these phone makers and trying to figure out what is the best way that we can put this, you know, Netflix app on your network so it can be downloaded so it can play on every single device.
Yeah. I guess next we got the iPad 2 announcement, which, you know, not a big surprise. Everyone knew it was definitely coming. And I gotta say, the specs are what I thought they would be, but I'm not really surprised. I'm not surprised with what they announced as far as the specs for it. What about you guys?
I'm buying one.
I might go for an older iPad now that this one came out. Did they say, I guess a more detailed, like, what's in it and what does it do over the iPad 1?
In the link I provided, there's a comparison between the two. As far as the specs go.
Yeah, those are specs though.
I honestly don't think it's, as far as like software goes, I haven't heard it being able to do anything different.
Yeah, because I see the comparison. There's not a whole, other than the VGA and the 720p, there's not a whole lot that I can really see that's I guess a big differentiating factor other than the form factor of it. Of course, they're gonna make every piece of technology smaller and more form
fit. Thinner.
But other than I really don't see anything.
That the size is one of the big things for me. The current iPad isn't bad for shorter periods of time, but if you're going to hold that thing for very long, it starts to get heavy. So the fact that it's lighter is a major plus. the addition of the two cameras, because the current one doesn't have a single camera, means that the FaceTalk capability that's in iOS 4 right now will now be applicable to the iPad. And then there's some other things they showed. Now, how much of this could be done in the original iPad and how much has been enabled by having the faster dual-core processor, I don't know. But there's a bunch of stuff they showed with GarageBand as an app that looks like a pretty cool app. And then the Movie Maker software that will be available as well. Again, a lot of that is related to the fact that you now have the camera, will also be an interesting application.
Now, I see that the graphics and also the memory is question marked out. Now, is that because they haven't announced it, or is that because they haven't said what it's going to be like as far as, like, will you be able to pick, I guess, your own iPad, too, and kind of customize it and cater it to you, much like you can do, like, the MacBooks?
Well, it just like the original iPad, you'll be able to choose how much flash memory you have. But I think the RAM is probably defined.
It's probably a gig.
Yeah.
So I think at this point there's some things they didn't announce definitely, and that's probably where the question marks are. But nobody's expecting that it's going to be a lot. I don't think anybody's expecting it'll be a lot more than what was in the existing iPad.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised to see that the camera, the back camera has no type of flash at all.
That's consistent with the iPhone.
Oh, the iPhone doesn't have flash?
No.
Oh wow.
Steve Jobs doesn't like flash, don't you know that?
No, I meant like the camera, the camera flash.
I know what you meant.
Oh, okay.
I think the iPhone,
talking about either way.
The iPhone 4 doesn't have flash?
No.
Oh, wow. I know my 3G doesn't have flash, but I didn't know the iPhone 4 doesn't have flash. I think it does have flash.
The iPhone 3 doesn't. I don't know. I
got the
3G.
I got a 3G. It doesn't have flash, but I believe the iPhone 4 does have flash. But a lot of times, I don't think you even need the flash, man. Like I never need that flash.
I would beg to differ. My cell phone camera does not have flash, and there's been many times where I've tried to take pictures and it's been too dark, and it's been a pain in the ass because there's been moments where it's been dark outside or whatever, and something really cool has happened, and I've wanted to take a picture, but nothing. So flash can really make a difference.
the only time I use the flash on my Droid is as a flashlight. It works pretty nice, actually. You can do it with the iPhone with the screen, but it's not as good as that flash LED that they use for the flash on the back of the Droid.
Yeah, and I think another big problem I have with it is the software is basically like a ported version of the what's on the iPod Touch or the iPhone. Phone, basically. Nothing really majorly different.
But
the Android tablets where they run a specific version of Android that's built specifically for, tablets. And
see, but I think in my case, I believe that's a smart move on Apple's part.
True, but I mean, I look at it as, just a big iPod Touch or iPhone.
It's not. Trust me, I've got both, and it's not.
Okay.
What it does do is it allows the apps to be you get more commonality with the apps. It's easier to have an app for both that way.
Yeah, exactly. So I know they have the competition. They have a couple others, but I guess the big one everybody's talking about is the Motorola Zoom. What do you guys think as far as what the consumer? Do you think the consumer will still flock to the iPad because of the name recognition or the Motorola Zoom?
It depends on marketing. If they market the Zoom well and they show off that it's running the software that's specifically meant for a tablet, so you get a unique experience, unlike the the iPad where it's almost the same, or that's what it appears like. So, I mean, I think it's just the marketing wise that plays a big part.
I think the problem at this point is Apple has two things I think that's going for them currently. That's not going to change in the next couple of years anyway. It's going to take a while if it does turn around. The first is they have the apps. The apps are in one location. They're easy to find. They're better. And the link about security concerns, they're in control. Google had to go in and wipe, I think it was 50 apps from the Android marketplace. And they actually went in and removed them automatically from people's phones, flipping a kill switch, because it turned out they were collecting information they shouldn't have been collecting. And so I think the apps, there are more apps currently for the iPad and the iPhone, and because they've got a better install base out there, or they've had a better install base for a while, that's gonna work in their favor. The second thing that's going to work in their favor is simply the fact that right now they are the equivalent of Windows and Android is the equivalent of Linux. And so if you want more control and being able to do more stuff, like somebody who runs Linux on their computer, you're going to be drawn to Android. But if you just want something that you can pick up and have it work, you're going to go with iOS.
Yeah, well, I gotta say,
play devil's advocate here. Like, do you think a lot of times that could kind of be the downfall of Apple and to their detriment by making everything proprietary and making everything, I guess, super simplistic? But you have to go to them for every solution, because I know it's times with my iPhone 3G where I just wish that I could just load a program on there, you know, quick and easy, and you know, just adapt stuff the way I want to adapt it, but a lot of times I can't because I have to go through channels of iTunes and get approvals through, you know, different scroll panels that I have to say I accept and things like that, and I have to load a whole program just to, you know, get one update or something like that on, you know, on my iPhone. Whereas I see people with Androids, they just upload the software quickly. They can jump in, jump out, get one program, adapt it, and be done. Even though that may not be
automatic updating too, there's a feature to automatically update.
You know, but I don't think that, you know, Apple's going anywhere in no time soon. Of course, because they have that mass appeal. But just trying to play the other side of the ball.
And that's why I said, you know, 2 years from now, maybe things have started to turn around, right? Because early on, from a PC standpoint, if you look at Mac and the early Macs versus the early DOS and Windows machines, Macs were more or less equal or maybe even ahead. I think Apple's got a bigger lead here than they ever had in the PC, which will work in their favor. But I think ultimately people are going to go where the apps are. And so if Android can build that up and start pulling that in, but everybody who releases today, pretty much, what do they release for first?
iTunes.
Yeah. Well, and until that starts to change, that's where the people are going to go.
I think it is going to change because we've talked about it before. They've raised their price of, you know, their 30%, you know, 30% they're charging the developers, especially for like content, like month to month type stuff, like I guess subscription type apps.
And again, like I said, a couple years from now, maybe a totally different picture. But all it takes is one of these apps that Google doesn't catch, that where 100,000 people lose some critical information that they've got stored on their phone, and it sets Android back years.
True.
You could say the same thing about anything, though. I mean, you could definitely.
Yeah, but it's much more likely. The point is, it's already happened with Android. Because it's an open system. There are not that many checks and balances. Whereas with iPad or with iOS, whether it's iPad or iPhone or iPod Touch, there are a lot of checks and balances before that app gets approved and put out on the store.
Yeah. It's a very tricky thing because, I mean, the Apple's new policy, you know, some big apps are really starting to, or big developers are really starting to look at it and say, maybe we need to rethink being with Apple, like Rhapsody, for instance. That I'm sure they have a huge, you know, subscription. They have a huge amount of people who subscribe to Rhapsody, you know, so, and, you know, they're stepping away from Apple, and, you know, just a bunch of developers like that, you know, stepping away from Apple could really hurt them. And, I mean, as far as like the iPhone versus Android, Android's been doing a lot better since, for the last, like, I think 6 months, they've been selling more because you can get an Android device on any carrier.
Yeah, I think one of the main things they need to do, though, in the midst of them, you know, trying to grab this market share and, you know, I won't say completely taking it away, but they need to show, I guess the manufacturers need to, I guess, show the practicality, the functionality, and show that it's easier on this platform, you know, which, of course, us in the know, we already know that it is. But, you know, like I've said on a previous podcast, like, I mean, my wife, I mean, you know, she may know a little bit about the Android, but she doesn't know a whole lot about it, you know, and she has an iPhone 3GS and she's, you know, she's comfortable where she is. She's in that space. She's just now learned how to, you know, mess with this thing and everything else or whatever. So, I mean, to her, I mean, it's absolutely frightening to say, hey, I want to change up everything that you knew about and go to this new platform. Like to most people, that's catastrophic to them. And they're so comfortable, you know, with that iTunes and plugging their phone up and doing the adaptability and going through all the Apple processes, and they feel proud that they've learned that. So adapting to a new system is really terrifying to some people.
See, and I think the other thing, if Google really wants Android to be successful longer term, they have got to find a way to get the hardware manufacturers to push the OS updates at more or less the same time. It is hurting Android right now that there are all different flavors of Android out there, and Amen. People aren't migrating as much.
Well, like I said before, you can just there are a lot of phones, a lot of manufacturers who are, you know, doing like very cheap hardware and just throwing Android on it just so they can say, you know, it's a smartphone, you know, you can get this smartphone for free, you know, and it's only like, you know, 500 and something megahertz processor and can barely run Android and can't have updates because the hardware are, you know, just limits it to being able to.
Right.
And that's going to hurt them.
Right. And see, that goes to DeChain's point, is that that's where that checks and balances comes in at. Like, you know, I don't think that you'll ever see iTunes on any other device. You know, they'll probably, you know, adapt it to, of course, your computer, because you have to have the adaptability to, you know, get updates and things of that nature. And it's a lot quicker to go to your computer or to your Mac and, you know, download software updates and things like that. But that's about it. Like, the PC, laptops, that's about the only other platform iTunes really allows, you know, their programs to actually be on.
True, but I mean, you look at the iPhone. Some of the older iPhones can't do certain things that the newer ones can, like multitasking. It's just as far as the hardware capability. And I mean, the people who are buying like the Motorola Charm, or who are getting it for free when they sign up with T-Mobile or, you know, renew, the people who are getting that, I don't think are really that concerned about getting, you know, Android 2.3.
Yeah, but when they get it, though, and they have that device, I mean, you know, say what you will, it has an Android name, like you said. I mean, it's slapped on there. I mean, for better, but is it for better or for worse? Because they slapped the name on there, and now this person has become a little bit more savvy than what they were when they first bought the phone. Let me see what this thing can actually do. And then when they can't do all the things that they would like for it to do that the Android name is actually pushing, then that kind of tarnishes Android's name. And they're like, man, that sucks. You know, I'm not getting an Android phone or whatever, because they cheaped out and they got the cheapest phone, or you got those reps that are trying to get paid that just sell you the cheapest phone to get you signed up, you know. So
yeah, I think the commercials really put the, like, some of the commercials, like the Droid commercials, show that, you know, you can do all this stuff with Android if you've got this type of device, you know. If you've, you know, the Droid Incredible has a gigahertz of processing power, and however the commercial goes, I mean, at least to me, it seems like that shows you that's not a cheap phone. That's going to be able to do the Android to its full capacity.
Yeah, it does. But once again, if my wife saw that commercial, she's like, oh, okay, I need a gig to do this and that, this and that, whatever. But then when she gets up to that counter and that sales rep starts talking to her and starts going on about, you know, oh, you don't need that. This has Android on it and it has, you know, blah, 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 whatever. And this thing is a piece of crap. She's going to get so caught up in that moment, and she's trusting this rep to tell her the right thing because she doesn't know. But she saw a commercial, and that's all she can pretty much go by. And she just kind of gets, you know, and that's what a lot of, you know, consumers kind of, you know,
Yeah, I understand that, but your example would never work because sales reps work on commission, so they would want to try to sell the highest end phone. But I could definitely understand, like, someone going in and, you know, just wanting a newer phone, maybe like a BlackBerry or something, you know, and them saying, oh, look, the Android can do this and this, and then they sell the cheap phone. I can definitely see that. But
yeah.
Like I said, I think marketing is a big thing. Marketing is one of the biggest things for basically getting the knowledge out to the public. How they'll be able to do that, you know, whether they can do it with a really good commercial or whether there are demo units at Best Buys and stuff like that where people can see. I guess it's just there's so many factors, but I mean,
hey, and look, I'm a PC guy. I used a Mac back in the early days, but I've used every Windows operating system since 3.1 on my home personal computers. When I first started buying MP3 players, I bought Creative Labs versions of MP3 players as opposed to buying an iPod. I think the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC are some of the most obnoxious commercials that have ever been made.
Definitely.
but with that said, now I have, you know, I ended up switching to an iPod. Now I've got an iPhone. I've got an iPad. I'm going where the apps are that I use. And, you know, I bought a Droid with the hopes that when I bought it that, you know, Android would quickly catch up. But so far, for what I do, it doesn't have the functionality that my iPod and or my iPhone and my iPad do.
A big thing for me with Android is a lot of the apps I use are free, and I've rarely had to pay for an actual app on Android.
True.
Which on the iPhone or iPod Touch, you know, all the good apps are mostly you got to pay for. So that's a big plus. There are a couple other tablet. I'm not going to really go too into it, but I've seen some of the stuff HP has shown off with their touchpad, and that could be a big contender. That could take a big chunk out of both Android and, you know, Apple, or for the iPad too. I mean, some of the stuff the HP is doing with their touchpad is.
Well, it's basically the old Palm system, or an upgrade on the old Palm system, and so it's been around a while, and HP definitely knows how to make hardware. But I'm going to be very surprised if that one takes off.
Some of their stuff they were talking about like their cloud some of the cloud services they were talking about in it it's just pretty amazing. And I mean, if you haven't really checked it too much out, I definitely would suggest looking up, like, on Engadget or something, some of the coverage they've done on it, because it's pretty impressive. But I don't want to go too deep in that, because we've already talked about this a lot. But I guess if there's no more discussion on this, we can move to our I Recommend section, which this week it was Knox's pick.
Yep, it was Freakonomics. This was actually started by DeShane. We were on the, was it the Future Tech?
Yep.
Yes.
Podcast? Yeah, it was the Future Tech podcast, and we were talking about all that stuff, and he brought up Freakonomics as far as the book. I went to a library over there by my job. I couldn't find it. Nobody had it. But I actually saw it pop up on my Netflix queue, like, boom, recommendations. Very next day, Freakonomics was on the Netflix queue, and I was like, oh, man, I got to watch it. And I started watching it, man. It was some very interesting topics that they were covering, you know, on just the material that they were covering, going over and everything. So I'll let you guys kind of – I mean, when I first saw it on the queue, I just started playing it, and, you know, I like what they were talking about, and, like, you know, they were switching through different topics. So it was good to me. What did you guys think?
I definitely enjoyed it. I mean, it was an interesting – I guess documentary or adaptation of the book, however you want to say it. But I've not read the book. I'm going to read the book after, you know, definitely after watching this. But it's very interesting, some of the topics they touch on, like the names, you know, whether a name of a person can basically the outcome of whether it affects their, like, destiny or whatever.
Yeah,
whether they'll be successful in life.
And right. It really got me thinking. I mean, it's very interesting, and especially when they were saying that the African American communities, they have, like, they make the most unique names, and, you know, I don't
unique.
Know, yeah,
yeah.
Like 250
like
different,
4 different ways. Yeah,
250. I think he said.
Yeah,
versions of spelling unique, and that's just pretty crazy. And
it is something to think about, because that's so funny that was actually on there, because that was one of the things, you know, when me and my wife were talking, we were going back and forth and everything, and I mean, we talk about everything, so. When we named my son, I named my son Ian. You know, it's real short. It's to the point. It's not a whole lot to it. But you got some people, you know, that, like they said, you know, that your success is not determined by your name, which it's ultimately not. It depends upon the person. But okay, say for instance, you see an application and it has Shaniqua on it. You know, automatically that person's perception of that person, you know, we would pray that it doesn't, you know, spark a preconceived notion in this person's mind,
but
we all know that it does. Or if you see someone that says Bobby Joe, you know, I mean, you got to think this person, he's like a country, you know, redneck or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So even though this person may be totally opposite to what their name is, like, you know, in a person's mind, they automatically have these preconceived notions about this person before they even, you know, just about the name, not even seeing the person's face, or, you know, contacting the person, talking to the person, seeing the person's personality. So, you know, that, I guess, at initial, because they were talking about the, you know, I guess the different women, like they were saying, like back in the day, you know, Misty and Candy and all those names was they were popular, but like now those are all associated with stripper names.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the way the media has portrayed. You see, you know, a black comedy where, you know, LaQuisha or whatever is this, you know, the stereotype of, you know, loud mouth, ignorant black woman. I mean, not maybe someone named LaQuisha or LaQuisha is actually, you know, a genius. Maybe there are probably a few that are, but I mean, it's just the stereotypes of, you know, that the media has portrayed of them being ignorant and loud mouth and, you know, having an attitude and whatnot. So,
well, what was interesting was the guy who named his first son Winner and his second son Loser.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, that was funny.
Yeah.
But
Loser turned out to be the winner.
Yeah.
Oddly enough.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, and there's some other very interesting topics. I mean, the whole cheating in the sumo world. I never would have when I saw cheating, I never would have associated it with sumo wrestling.
Yeah, and that's the same thing that they said, because, you know, a lot of the Japanese culture is, you know, drenched in purity and about respect and honor and all these different virtuous things. And, you know, they were just saying, you know, given the right circumstance, you know, and when, you know, when stakes are high, you know, people, there's a high possibility that people will cheat even in a setting like this. You know, which is, it's so crazy, because this is like the least place that you would find cheating, because, I mean, these guys are huge. I mean, these guys are working out, things like that. I mean, so you would think that that nobody could just throw a fight, but, you know, when they start breaking down the numbers and everything, what was it? I think it was like 8 matches and you got to rank up or whatever. Mm-hmm. You got to go to like the high ranks. So they figured out that, you know, almost always when the person needed that 8th win, they would almost always win. And then when it came back around for them to lose for somebody who needed that 8th win, they would always lose. So that was just crazy seeing that. And then all the scandalous stuff that was happening after that, like people who were trying to come forward and kind of, you know, expose them, you know, people winding up dead. And yeah, I mean, it was crazy. Shit. Yeah. Yeah. It was wild, man, because, you know, I mean, when you're coming forward with the truth and people don't want to be exposed, especially in something like that they make so much money off of, and just the level of I guess the facade of honor and you know what they portray sumo to be, it's almost like a samurai code, dude. I mean, because, you know, think of those guys. I mean, those guys train, you know, they come up in rank. Some of those guys, like, they were training, you know, children since they were, you know, really 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 small. So, you know,
and those, you know, workouts, God, those are killer.
Yeah. I mean, and
I would have died.
And those guys are huge, and those guys are more limber than I am. Like,
oh, yeah, those guys doing the splits. Holy smokes.
That was crazy.
Definitely. Stuart, you want to chime in some more?
I was going to talk about the teachers cheating, actually, because, you know, I come from that side. You know, I absolutely believe it. You know, especially today, you know, with, you know, such a big deal about being all, you know, high test scores and, you know, low schools that have low test scores are, you know, not given a lot of money, which is exact opposite of what it should be, but.
Yeah, well, definitely didn't happen when I was in school, so I can vouch that.
it probably did.
Not for me. That's what I mean. Not for me.
Yeah.
Same with the getting paid monthly for, you know, what is it, having C's?
Man, did you see that?
$50 a month. They were getting paid
$50 just to pass.
And getting a chance to ride $500 and riding, what, a limo?
Yeah, it was
that
like
one
a stretch
kid got
Hummer
so excited. That was just funny, but.
Yeah. But you see almost like, I can't think of the one guy's name he had on the blue shirt, not the guy with the long hair. Can't think of the guy's name. But anyways, he was talking about his 3-year-old, and he was saying
that was
how
funny.
Love it.
Right. Yeah, he was saying how like, you know, how, you know, given, you know, someone an incentive, you know, he was trying to teach his daughter how, you know, to go to the potty. And, you know, nothing worked. And he said, you know, she was, what, I guess three years old or something like that or whatever. And they were trying to get her to go to the potty. And so finally, the incentive was to give her some M&Ms whenever she went to the potty. But slowly but surely, within you know, a couple of weeks, I guess it
three
was a
days.
Week or so. Yeah,
3 days.
Yeah, 3 days. This 3-year-old had pretty much worked the system. She would go to the potty, tinkle just a little bit, come back, ask for an M&M. Go to the potty, do it again, come back, ask for an M&M. And that was kind of going back to what they were trying to stop in the first place, because when you have these kids that are, because their motivation is not doing it because they want to get better in school or because they want to make their parents proud or because they just have the will to just, you know, be better at school, their motivation is the incentive, this money. And so is that the right way, you know, because then you turn those kids into adults to look that way, like, not wanting to help anybody because what's in it for me? Because I've kind of been trained that way now. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have the attitude of saying, you know, hey, what's the incentive? Which is, I guess, good as far as a corporate setting, maybe. But even that, like, you know, even like, because you have to, you know, want to do your job in order for it to be fun for your employees, even if you're higher up in the chain. So, you know, I don't know if incentivizing to that level is the correct way to go, because then you have that whole big cycle, because their fundamental way of solving the problems that had, you know, kids getting bad grades is actually funneling back into the fundamental problem that they had, you know, initially, because then you have teachers starting to cheat because they probably get more incentives, or you have teachers cutting deal with students saying, well, for every B you get, give me half the money, or, you know, so on and so forth. Because remember their theory, you know, when stakes are high, when the opportunity presents itself, given, you know, certain people will cheat, you know, to get ahead or to get money or whatever.
Well, here's what also the school system does. I don't know if that happens everywhere. It's just something that happens where I live. Like the higher end schools, they would actually pass on the lower test score students onto the lower schools. They say, oh no, this person is should be in this department, but we don't have that department. It's in that school, so you've got to go there.
Doesn't happen here. It's just where you live, district. It's split up and.
Yeah, it doesn't happen here. They just, if you get low test scores, they just lay off all the teachers here in Texas.
And I'll say this: my parents actually tried the money thing for grades with me. It didn't work.
Yeah,
it didn't work there either.
Right? Yeah, I mean, with that one kid, what was the kid's name or whatever he had?
The
skateboard
failed.
Kid. Yeah, he was like he got in there and he did, you know, a little bit better one time, then he got worse than what he did when he first came. Yeah. He just, because the motivation is not there. Like, even though you provide the incentive, like, that goes back to my original point. Like, a person has to have, you know, something more than just that incentive. They have to want it, you know? I mean,
also, money was not that kid's currency.
Right.
It should have been something
else. Image,
it was
his image. It was popular.
Right. Yeah. And it was so sad, man, because his mom was working her butt off. And she's working in this, probably a grocery store, making cakes and stuff like that. And I mean, I'm not judging anybody's status, because I'm by no means any type of financial status. But they looked at like they were probably, you know, middle, low class or whatever. And she said to him that she would double whatever he got. Like, she would, you know, take money out of her own pocket and then double that. Like, but he just had no motivation to do it for that. Nor to make her happy, you know, so.
Yeah, definitely. He was more worried about his image, which I would have done. I would have just been like, okay, here's a pair of slacks. Here's a gray button-up shirt. You know, here's a couple of those. That's all you can wear till your grades get up.
Yeah. And see, his plan for life.
His grades would have gone up.
Definitely.
I mean, but the kid, he already had his plan set for life, though. He knew that he was going to fail. He said, I don't know, I'll go to the military. I'll go to Iraq because I'm going to get my GED and I'll join the military or whatever. You know, I mean, man, like, you know, you just think about that. And, you know, like you said, I mean, his motivation was his image. I mean, the facade that he's trying to portray, you know, to, you know, the cool skater kid or whatever.
So. Mission accomplished. Your image of being a dumbass was kept.
So, I mean, somebody who's actually read the book, DeShane, like as far as the movie, as far as the documentary, I know that they probably couldn't cover as much material as they can in the book. But do you think that they did a good job of covering what they could?
Yeah, I mean, each of the longer segments were like pretty much chapters in the book. They didn't go in, you know, it's a movie. They couldn't go into all the detail of the, you know, some of the analysis that was done. So like in the book on the teachers in Chicago, they go into a lot more detail about how they figured out looking at those scan cards, which teachers were cheating and which ones weren't.
Oh.
And then they discuss, okay, part of what they did was then they looked at those students that they figured had the teacher had cheated. They looked at how they performed the next year. And nearly every one of those students performed worse the next year, right?
Oh, wow.
So there was pretty good evidence, right, that the teacher in that one grade had done something for them on there. And there are chapters in the book that they totally didn't touch on at all. Like one chapter in the book is entitled "Why Most Drug Dealers Live in Their Mother's Basement." And so the typical stereotypical geek, right, is a guy who lives at home with his mother. Well, it's true of drug dealers. And basically, they go into the deal from another person who was at the University of Chicago, who through a series of incidents that they talk about, ended up becoming associated with this gang and helping them track their finances. And when he did it, it was the first time anybody really had detailed data of the financial transactions that go on. And basically, the drug dealers on the street, right, the lowest level guys out on the street, do not make minimum wage.
Hmm.
And it was really interesting. It's a really interesting story. In fact, the guy who did that ended up writing a totally separate book about his experience. So there's another book out there just about his experience, but they do have a chapter in their book. And then there are other chapters in the book as well about voting and analysis of voting trends and some other things like that. So definitely, you know, if you're somebody who just doesn't read that kind of book, highly recommend the video. I watched it over the weekend. It's the first time I've actually seen the documentary and thought it was very well done, and they cover a lot of the material. But there's a lot more in the book if you get a chance to read the book. Or they now do a podcast once a week.
Oh, really?
Okay, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, the podcast for last week I knew was going to be interesting when I downloaded it because the title was The Power of Poop.
So, I mean, is it the Freakonomics podcast or is it
probably different? Yes, it is the Freakonomics podcast.
Okay.
Awesome. And it's hosted by like the New York Times or something like that is who hosts it. But you can get it on iTunes or I assume most of the other usual places for podcasts.
Right.
And it's relatively short. It's only about typically it's in the 20 to 25 minute range a week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's very short.
They had some good talent too to actually help them out telling the story. I know one of the guys. Well, I know two of the guys on the roster. The directors. They had Seth Gordon. He's the same guy who directed The King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters.
Okay.
Yeah, and they had Morgan Spurlock. Those are the two guys that stood out, you know, as far as director.
Definitely.
Which is the guy who directed Super Size Me. Okay. So yeah, I don't know the other people, but you know, it was filmed good. It was good.
Yeah, definitely. Any other thoughts on it?
This is probably the first thing in our I recommend section that I would recommend to my parents.
Yeah.
And like they would actually enjoy.
Alrighty. I guess since we can go into the geek question of the week, Stuart?
You mean the question of the week, because lately you haven't been very geeky, have they?
Yes, very.
Yeah.
As somebody kind of pointed out to me earlier this week.
That was me.
This week's question of the week was, if you could change one thing about the world to make it a better, safer place, what would you change and what would you replace it with? And we didn't really get any thing from the community.
I had a hard time distinguishing this from the question you guys did earlier, like if you could invent any one thing, right, to make things better or different.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about the time travel question.
Well, no, the invention question.
Oh, okay, the invention.
Yeah. Well, for my example, I would change the fact that broadband is not, or you know, broadband internet's not very, you know, it's very it's not spotty. Everywhere, you know, spotty. Yes, so I would change that. I would make you know, broadband the standard and the normal throughout, you know, like the United States and other countries and stuff like that. And that's pretty geeky answer. So, I guess, yeah. But I do like your answer. You may have been joking about it, Deshane, but I did like your answer you tweeted. You want to share that?
That was our only response on Twitter.
Well, it was a good one too.
It was about Thaddeus, and for those who may not know, somewhere back along the lines, he picked up the idea that I lived in Canada, and it's become a standard joke now. And earlier in the day, before you guys had retweeted the question, again for everybody to look at, somebody had tweeted something about something going on in Canada, and he had retweeted it and directed it at me, right? Because I live in Canada, which I don't. And so I just tweeted that, in response to the question, that I would replace Fadios with something more intelligent like an ostrich.
Very good answer.
but my actual response in thinking about this would be that I would create a rail infrastructure both in the city and between cities comparable to what's available in Europe and in a lot of Asia, where we'd have less traffic on the roads. We could use it for passenger and we could use it for freight. And so it would reduce a lot of, done properly, the trains would reduce a lot of accidents because a lot fewer people would be traveling that way via vehicle, and it would also reduce emissions, so cleaner air.
That'd be awesome.
I would definitely enjoy that.
Yeah.
Henry?
Oh, man, I had a hard time coming up with something for this question. I don't know, man. I would replace hatred with love so we can... I probably would do something like safer for people. I don't know. I probably would replace things like metals and plastics with some type of, I guess, I don't know, soft but cushiony structure, and then make cars out of it and stuff like that.
Yeah, isn't that what Fadio said?
Oh, okay.
Everything out of Nerf.
Yeah, exactly. So that way, you know, hey, if you wreck your car, it just phones back in place, no insurance needed. Okay, cool. Thanks, brother. You know, hey, keep going on. But, you know, we have so much conspicuous consumption, you and people agree on that. But that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine, I would just make sugar healthy. Because as a fat guy who's on the borderline of being diabetic, I'd make sugar healthy for you, and that would make the world a much better place.
It's not the fact that it's unhealthy; it's just it's moderation. People, too much of anything is bad. You know, you take too many vitamins, you could kill yourself.
Yeah, it's just like salt. Like they say, salt is bad for you, but salt actually secretes the poison out of your body whenever you sweat. But you know, you have to do things in order to sweat to get it out your body. And if you eat too much salt, then of course hypertension is coming for you.
Okay, reword it. I'd make an excessive amount of salt or sugar good for you. How's that?
Yeah, that works.
Can you make it chocolate instead? Oh, right.
We actually did get one from Facebook from my cousin, but I'm just going to read it. Eliminate insensitive and replace it with tolerance.
I thought about stuff like that, but then you get into the part where you're messing with people. You're messing with their mind.
Yeah, no free will.
Yeah, no free will. So that's the only reason why I wouldn't, and just mainly because I think I've seen too many sci-fi movies where that stuff goes bad.
You can't control me, Charles.
Next week, hopefully,
it will definitely be a geek question of the week instead of just a question of the week.
Yes, and I guess with that, we are the Geeks for the Win podcast. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, the Geeks FTW. Just search that and you'll find us. You can send us an email at thegeeksftw@gmail.com. Our voice line number is, you can find that on the show post on the website, which is thegeeksftw.com. You can leave us reviews on iTunes. We very much appreciate that. And, you know, every Monday night, normally around 7:30 Central Standard, 8:30 Eastern, you can find us on Ustream, where you can listen live. So definitely recommend that. And with that, I guess, shout-outs. DeShane, you want to go first?
Sure. Shout-out to you guys for having me on. Thanks. It's been a lot of fun, a lot of good discussion. Shout-out to you, Poetic, to DJ, to Paladin, and to Wolf for the Bulletstorm Anarchy mode last week. A lot of fun playing that. And look forward to playing it some more. I'm going to hold on to the game, so I think DJ rented it. But just shout-out to you guys for some good times online, and hopefully going to do it some more.
Alrighty. I know you said you felt kind of burned out on it. That's how I felt from playing like 3 days straight of the multiplayer, you know, long hour sessions. And I took a couple days break and then got back into it. And it, you know, it's fun. You just need a break from it. If a break really helps.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things. I'll hold on to it. It'll be something like Gears Horde mode, right? Where every so often, you know, hopefully people say, hey, what do you want to do? Well, let's hop on. We'll spend a few hours in Anarchy mode.
Definitely. Stuart?
You know, normal people, you know, the Geekswind Riders, Henry, Elf, Gucky, DJ sometimes. I also would like to shout out the people in the chat room. You know, Prophet 209.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry. I saw the P, so. Prophet 209, Anthony Alex, Cerebral Strike, Dark DJ, and Scoba.
Wow, that's a lot. Alrighty. Henry, shout-out?
Shout-out to our guest.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, shout-out to our honored guest, Mr. DeShane Vox. On Twitter, shout out to you, DeShane, man. Good Freakonomics talk, good Deus Ex talk. Thank you for schooling us. Shout out to just the usual suspects, Blue Man. Shout out to Anthony Alex. Shout out to actually, you know what? Shout out to the PS3. I'm loving the 7.1 DTS surround sound, automatically adaptation from my optical core to my receiver. Shout out to Uncharted, man. That is a game that I'm playing. I'm on chapter 17, I believe, and I'm just absolutely loving it. I played Uncharted 2, and the game is awesome. Shout out actually to Xbox Rewards. I know everybody's kind of been talking about the rewards that they really pay off. I've gotten a total of 420 points from Xbox Rewards so far.
Damn, how's that? I've only gotten like 60.
Yeah, I got 200 points for re-upping my Xbox Live account. I think I got about 40 points for doing little small surveys that they sent me in the email, and I got another 100 and some points for something else. I can't think of what it is, but they keep sending me emails. They sent me a free Zoom pass, and I did a little survey. They asked me questions about it. Send it in, and 60 points, 20 points, 40 points. I mean, they're giving me stuff left and right, so I'm just enjoying it. I use those points to buy the Pac-Man. So, you know, shout out to Xbox Live Rewards. Shout out to Scarcasm Live. Shout out to everybody in the chat, Scoba, Prophet 209. Shout out to Dark DJ. Shout out to all the writers of Geek for the Win, Elf. If I miss you, shout out to you. And of course, shout out to the world.
Alrighty. But a quick question on the rewards. Do you buy subscription cards, or do you just have it through your credit card or debit card?
Oh, no, no. It's through whatever email you signed it for.
No, like, I mean like paying to upgrade the subscriptions.
Oh, no, 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 no. It's done through your regular Xbox Live account. So if you have an Xbox Live account, all you do is go on Xbox.com and sign up for Xbox Live Rewards for free.
Well, I'm signed up, but I mean as far as like subscribing, you know, new, like add a month here or 3 months there, do you do that through like go to GameStop and buy the cards with the codes? Or
oh,
you...
yeah. Oh yeah, normally I buy the cards, but I don't know if you remember, but I think it was like sometime back in October, they had that Noble Six helmet, and they had if you signed up through credit card, you got it for $30 for 12 months. So I went ahead and jumped on that deal.
Yeah, because I've entered cards and I haven't gotten anything from the Xbox reward. So I'm
thinking, have you got any surveys?
I've gotten surveys, but I haven't gotten anything as far as what's it called, the subscription rewards.
Yeah,
I've entered the 3 month trial or 3 month cards or a month card, and haven't gotten anything. So I think you have to have it set up through like a credit card to qualify for that.
Yeah, I think you do. But that was only 200 of my points, so I've got the rest of the points through like surveys and little things here and there. But it's cool, huh?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's for, you know, basically extra stuff for what we're already paying for. So
right,
can't argue with that. As far as shout-outs go, shout-outs to you, Deshane, for coming on. Wanted to have you on for a while since, you know, we were pretty close as far as co-op partners or, you know, Left 4 Dead, Borderlands, all that stuff goes.
Yep.
Shout-outs to, you know, Paladin, who else? Paladin, Dark DJ, and, oh, I can't think of who else would, but we're playing some Gears and had some fun with that, the Horde mode. It was 23 times XP or 22 times XP, so I actually leveled up once, so that was interesting. Shout outs to, you know, the writers, people in the Ustream, and shout outs to just, I guess, anybody who listens to the podcast, you know. Just let us know, you know, give us your feedback so we can give you an individual shout out. With that said, this has been episode 35, another lengthy episode, unfortunately, for, I guess, the people who do not like longer podcasts, but it's just how it happened. I guess we'll see you next time.
Dragon Age 2 in a couple minutes.
That is the best outro we could ever do.